Welcome to the Vegan Changemaker podcast. My name is June Fuchs, and I'm on the quest to veganize over 50% of the global human population by the year of 2030. Sounds delusional? Well, obviously, I can't do it alone, and that's why in this podcast, you're getting to meet some of the most influential, inspiring, and impactful vegans there are. May this episode help you create more vegan impact in the world, because we need your help as well, dear vegan friend. Aloha, everybody listening to the Changemaker podcast. Today, I am here with a really special guest that I connected with through the platform of Facebook. Thanks, Facebook. Her name is Ray Sikora, and she has dogs in the background. Oh, she has doggies with her, as we heard. That's all chill. They can be a part of the podcast episode too. Why not? Why not?
I guess they're choosing that.
They're like, I have something to say. Well, they have had their fair share thing to say. Now I would love to ask you to introduce yourselves to all the people listening.
Okay, and sorry, it might be a little disruptive with the dogs. They're like every raven, bear, mountain lion that comes through because we live in the forest. They're like, hey, this is our house. So I apologize in advance if it's distracting. Think of it as just sort of like them as an exclamation mark for whatever I'm saying. Think
like
of it that.
Mm-hmm. We're gonna do that.
So my path has been unplanned. I never thought, I'm going to be vegan. I'm going to be an activist. I'm going to, you know, that was never, none of that was in my plan. And it was more just showing up with what was right in front of me and responding to what was right in front of me. So when I was quite young, I was 15, I had never heard of a vegetarian. And I went with a friend into a leather shop, and I had just eaten a hot dog before I went in. And I went with this friend into the leather shop, and I was very aware it was dead animals hanging. And I said, don't buy anything in here. It's dead animals. And the woman behind the counter said, do you eat meat? And my 15-year-old brain, what does meat have to do with dead animals? And then the light bulb went on. So I said to the woman, no, I don't eat meat. And my friend looked at me, she had just seen me eat the hot dog. And when we left, she said, why did you lie to her? And I said, no, I didn't lie. I will never eat meat again. And I still had not heard of a vegetarian. I didn't know that there was someone who didn't eat meat, but I knew that I was not going to. And I often think back on that as like, that woman wasn't mean. She asked me a question that made me question myself. She just said, do you eat meat? And I had to look inside and go, well, yeah, but what does that have to do with it? And it changed my life. It, you know, if we have like a aerial view of the map of our life, that was like a major turn on my path. Because at that point, I had to really think about like, what were my choices and how were my choices affecting everyone around me, all life? And I started exploring and digging and researching, and it led me then to eventually being vegan, also not knowing the word vegan. I was 20 and I was renting from a dairy farmer, and you know, I heard this sound I had never heard, and I rode my mountain bike next door to where he lived, and he was loading up the male calves to go to a veal facility, and some of them were just born, and I was so shocked. And at that point I was living on a lot of cheese because I was a vegetarian. You know, I was like, cheese, oh, you know, it's so addictive. And so I said to him, what is going on? And when he told me they were going to the veal facility, and the moms were the sound I was hearing, the babies were crying for the moms, moms were crying for the babies. I said, okay, no more dairy. And then I really started visiting places and researching. So it was like, no dairy, no eggs, no animal products of any kind, no wool. Because I started really visiting and seeing the reality. No, I can't support this reality. So then I was vegan, but didn't know. It took a while before I met somebody who was vegan. And I said, what is that exactly? And she told me what it was. I'm like, that's me. I have a word for me. And it just kind of, you know, it had this natural evolution to it. You want to kind of, when you discover compassionate living, you want to scream it from the rooftops. You know, you want everybody to get this wonderful thing, this compassion. And so I started doing education work in schools. Like, I wasn't getting paid to do it. I just started going into schools and letting students know, like, what's the reality of what you're purchasing, and teaching them about critical thinking, you know, and not telling them how to live, but helping them align their deepest core values with their lifestyles. Like, you say that you care about animals. What does that look like in your life? And I loved that, like, just inspiring them to think critically about the world around them and find out how they wanted to live in alignment with their values. So that became my whole life. Okay, so all this is 46 years ago.
Yeah, I just was about to ask for us to put it in perspective.
46 years ago, I was vegan without knowing the word vegan. And I, you know, I started just going into places. You could get into anywhere then, you know. So I visited veal facilities, battery hen facilities, and I would film and photograph. And back then, it was just, there wasn't high security. Nobody was stopping me. And then I would share this. I'd bring groups of school kids in for tours of these places and tell them, be respectful, but look around, you know, just look around, ask a lot of questions, and we'll process it afterwards. Don't be mean to the people who work here. We will process this. So it all just kind of, like, you know, it was, became a lifetime of activism and education. And then I met my wonderful then work partner, Zoe Weil, and we were both doing what was called humane education, which I didn't know I was even doing something that had a name. And we started the Center for Compassionate Living together and Institute for Humane Education. And everything just keeps, you know, I said to the universe, hey, universe, you want me to keep doing this work? Just make sure I am healthy. I have a really nice roof over my head and organic food in the fridge. If I have all that, then I will keep doing this. I don't have to be wealthy in the bank. I want to have a rich life, but not wealthy in the bank. I don't care about that. And everything is always, it's like magic. Like, I have focused on compassionate living and doing it this for my work. And the universe, or whatever you want to call the universe, truth, God, whatever you call it. I just say the universe just keeps going, here you go. Here's a great place to live. You get to live in the national forest. You get to feel like you're 20 when you're 66. You get, you yes. know, so I just feel like it all just keeps being provided. Wow. And it's been a really beautiful life. I don't have a plan. I haven't needed one. It's the right thing just always shows up.
Yeah, it really looks like it. And thank you for, like, summing this whole story up so organically. I could relate to many things that you said, like these shifting moments, although they weren't that long ago for me. But what was so beautiful, and what I think everybody here already can take away, is that when you have these everyday moments which gift you with these drops of insights, like these golden nuggets, you may call them, like that woman in that store asking you, do you eat meat? Like, that's just an invitation for you to evolve into a direction that you're meant to anyway. And I think for all of us, these things happen daily. Even if we're already vegan, there's much more. You already talked a little bit about trusting the universe, asking the divine, asking God, spirit, whatever you want to call it, right? You said it so beautifully. And then keeping on evolving and staying aware, like staying aware, what is this, or what is it now telling me to make my next step? And you summed it up so organically that a lot of people who might listen now don't really understand what you have organically built throughout your life. Obviously, I'm going to leave everybody with the link to your website and to your books, because you've also written books and created this whole platform and educational programs around it. So I'm going to share that all with everybody, that you can check it out, because it's really worth it. Today's episode, I want to zoom in with you on a more specific topic that has often been asked by people that follow me or that interact with me online. And the topic is meditation. And meditation obviously is very often linked to mindfulness, linked to manifesting, and linked to living in alignment with what the universe has laid out for you. So what I want to share with everybody listening here today is how meditation has entered your life. And then specifically, where's the bridge? Like, how does meditation support you as a vegan in this world and as an activist? But let's go first with, like, how did meditation enter your life?
I didn't ask for it. I had a friend visiting me from Australia, Helena, and she was on the phone making reservation for this meditation course, Vipassana. And it was in Massachusetts, and, you know, the main teacher was going to be there. I caught little bits, but I was very dense. Like, I didn't know anything about meditation, nothing. And I was always on the move. I was never sitting and being mindful. No way. And I said to her, do two, make two reservations. She was like, no. Like, she couldn't picture me sitting still. And so she did end up making two, and we drove to the Berkshires together from Minnesota. And when we got there, we had to bring tents because Mr. Big Stuff, I didn't even know the guy, the teacher, he was coming from India, you know? So Mr. Big Stuff was there. And so there wasn't room in the house for people to stay. And they had a big open, just a top tent for the hundreds of meditators who came. You weren't allowed to kill mosquitoes. And you weren't allowed to kill at all. There were these precepts. And I'm like, whoa, we're in the Berkshires in the summer, there's mosquitoes everywhere. And then I set up my tent and the silence started. It was 10 days of silence. I had never been silent, I don't think, for 10 minutes, let alone 10 days. And I'm like, okay, I'm setting up my tent and the zipper breaks on my tent. And I'm like, oh, fucking hell, you know, mosquitoes. And not only that, but fire ants moved into the tent, were biting fire ants. Ew. It was hell. And then I would be sitting, you were supposed to just sit upright, you know, and I'd be sitting against one of the posts in that tent, hating the teacher, hating the woman who brought me out there. Like, and I didn't know I had hate or anger in me. Rah! It's like Darth Vader came out. And so I was like, I hate this place. I'm leaving. Wah! Day two. And I was all bit up from the fire ants. And there was only one time you could speak. And that was at noon. You could write your name on a little piece of paper to talk to Mr. Big Stuff, who I still didn't know his name at this point. You know, not it's, you know, Goenkaji. He's this amazing human. He's not alive anymore on earth, but amazing teacher. So I write my name so hard on the little piece of paper, I tear it. I had anger. I was like, rah! And I write my name on the paper. I go in and I slam the door, and it's in this little farmhouse. And I said, I fucking hate this place. I fucking hate you. Fuck this place. I'm fucking going home. My fucking zipper's broken on my fucking tent. I said the F word, like, I don't know, probably 100 times to this guy. And he just sat there smiling with his wife next to looking at me, smiling. He said, oh, he said, well, this is a storm and the storm will pass. I said, buddy, this is no fucking storm and it's not going to pass. And I was like, crazy woman, you know, and I didn't realize everyone in the house could hear the woman who was like saying, fuck to the teacher. And there's no swearing at the center, you know? So I'm like going off. I was like, rah! And so he was just smiling and he said, yes, the storm will pass. And he said, move into the house. And I thought he lived there. I didn't know anything. And I said, move into your house? He said, yes, one more bed, move into the house. And I got this big smile. I said, really? And he said, yes, oh, the storm has passed. And I was like, oh, I realized, like, suddenly I was all happy. And I said, I don't think I'm ready for your teaching. This is intense. I don't think I'm ready. I'm not that kind of person. And he just laughed. And with all the love, all I felt was love from him, even though I had just sworn at him, like called him all kinds of names, total love. And he said, "You're ready." He said, "Just practice, keep practicing." And I said, "Oh, thank you, you know." It was a real lesson. And that was in 1984. And every year I do a 10-day course, and then I have my practice that I do at home. And what changed a lot for me in the practice was I was such a reactionary person. When you learn what's going on with animals and the environment and human rights, it's very hard to stay calm. It's very hard to stay loving. And it became this sort of lifelong experiment in when do I get the best results in the world? And when I'm communicating with people, do I get the best results when I am attacking, when I'm fighting, or do I get the best results when I invite them to a loving, irresistible community? And when I invite them into an irresistible community of compassion, people are so much more open to it. You know, it really changed my communication and my activism so much, where instead of always like, you've met activists like this, I know. Like you meet an activist and they're like, "Oh, I've got your attention. You're gonna understand everything that I believe. I want you in 5 minutes to understand what took me 40 years or 50 years or however long it took, but you're going to get it in 5 minutes. Ran, 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 ran." You know, it was all, that's how I was. Like, you've got to know about this. You are going to understand this. And everything shifted for me with the meditation. Then I was like, oh, I want to understand them instead of that they have to understand me. And so, you know, people, they would come up to the table where I'm tabling with literature on animal rights and environmental issues and human rights issues. And people would come up to the table and say things. And like one woman, there's so many examples, but one woman came up and she said, "You know, I'm kind of a vegetarian, but I do eat chicken." And I said, "Oh," I said, "How did you choose which animal you were going to continue to eat?" And she said, "Well, you know, chickens." I said, "I do know chickens. Tell me about your experience of chickens." And she said, "What do you mean?" I said, "You know, like your interactions that you've had with them." She said, "Well, you know, they're stupid." And I said, "Oh, I have such a different experience of them. Tell me about your experience of chickens." And she said, "Well, I don't have any experience with chickens. I bet everybody knows they're stupid." I said, "Oh, it's actually a myth." I said, "Do you want to hear about some of my friends who are chickens?" And she said, "Yeah, I guess so, yeah." And so I started telling her about some of my dearest friends who are chickens, who are brilliant and brave and just amazing individuals. And I was telling her a few stories about them, the ones who know their names and come running to me, and the ones who protect their babies, just a few stories about some friends. And this woman's face totally changed. And she looked right at me and she said, "Oh, I guess I don't eat chickens." And I said, "Oh," I said, "that's probably a good idea." You know, yes. And letting people like come to their own. Like,
yeah.
And just trying to understand them, people will say to me, "Oh, I used to be vegan. You know, I'm not vegan anymore." And instead of being like, "What?" You know, I don't do that. I just say, "How does that feel? How does it feel that at one point you made a choice that felt like it was so in alignment with what you believed? And then you made the choice to not do this thing that's in alignment with your heart. How does it feel? Tell me about it." Like, I let people go in and then share who they are with me. They don't need to hear about me and why I do what I do. They need to just hear themselves.
Yeah.
About why do I do what I do? Oh, that doesn't really make sense. Or sometimes it does make sense to them. They're like, they have their reasons, they justify it. And then I say, I hope that keeps evolving for you. I hope that one day you can go back to that place where your deepest core values, that most compassionate you, lines up with your choices, because it feels so good when it lines up. So I hope you get to go back there one day.
That's so beautiful. And what I love about this, we had this conversation with Jordi. I know that you're also familiar with him and his work. I interviewed him previously, and we came to the sentencing of pre-vegans, or people that not yet vegans, right? And I just want to highlight at this moment here, when anybody here that's listening that is like, oh, this is, it sounds really nice, but it's all too woo-woo and I don't want to start meditating to become a better activist, you know, I just want to highlight that this energy, like, I was just hooked in from the moment you started telling about your story. And I bet a lot of people listening can relate to how I feel when I hear you talk, Ray. And I want to highlight that for me as well, when I started meditating, this brought this inner sense of calm and receptiveness for whatever is happening on the outside without having to follow these triggers and act from these emotions that might come up within me, but like be able to separate them from the outer circumstances and face those circumstances. A circumstance can be a pissed off non-vegan who's yelling at you, or a butcher who's like, how dare you, you know, like tell me that I'm doing the wrong job or whatever. People that feel threatened by your presence as a vegan, whatever it is, we don't have to react to that. And with that, we're holding the space for them to faster evolve into this version where they're like, okay, I understand this because I feel the same way. Actually, I just needed to have that insight within myself. So holding the space for somebody to grow into a vegan, I think that's way more efficient activism than throwing these negative or negatively labeled emotions as anger or frustration on to the other person. And there, I don't think there has any study been made, but the deeper I dive into this and the more people I talk to, the more I get to understand, and maybe I'll create a meta study at some point, you know, about this, that activists that meditate or are practicing mindfulness are more efficient than the ones that are not. And I think I'm starting to understand that from my experience and from our experience here as we are talking about it right now, right?
Oh, for sure. You know, I have decades of experimenting with this. And, you know, I won't say that I always have the mindfulness to really meet someone where they're at. And often it's hindsight. Oh, I could have said this. I could have done that. You know, but the after decades and decades of practicing, it's so natural. It's so much easier. And I kind of picture like a door here in someone's heart. And that door, maybe it's open just a tiny bit. And then you're talking to them and either it slams shut or it opens a little wider. And so it's the effectiveness that you're talking about. I feel like if that door slams shut, we haven't done our job. You know, our job is to not, at least it should stay where it is or open a little bit, but not slam shut. You know, you don't want to say anything. We don't want it. You know, you don't want it. I don't want it. I don't want somebody to tell me I'm a horrible person. And that door slams shut when that happens. And, you know, I'm not very Pollyanna about it. Like, I get that there is heartache in this work. There is despair in this work. You know, I do workshops on despair repair because I need them. You know, that's why I do them. Because we have seen behind closed doors and closed gates, we've seen, I think, the most difficult and darkest of what humanity is capable of. You know, I work in the Middle East a lot, and the things I've seen there, I won't even share with my own partner because I don't want him to carry it in his heart. You know, it's too much pain. But I think that our own pain gets healed when we can meet people in a loving place. And, you know, I mean, I'll give you an example. I was living in this little cabin in Minnesota and bam, bam, bam on the door one day. And I'm like, oh boy, this doesn't sound good. It's not a lovely knock. And I opened it up and it was a guy holding like a bow for hunting. you know, and he starts shouting at me, "We've been hunting here for generations. Da, 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 da. Why did you put those signs up?" And I had these signs all around my acreage that said, "You're welcome to hike here, to enjoy the river, to be with this place, but you are not allowed to kill anyone, to hunt, to fish, nothing like that. This is a sanctuary for animals." So I just made these signs. They were all over. And he was shouting and shouting and shouting at me. And I let him just kind of get it out of his system. And I listened and I listened. And I said, "Do you want to understand better why I have those signs up?" And he said, "Yes." He was so I said, "Why don't I make us each a cup of tea and we'll just sit on the porch and we can talk about it." And he was like, you know, I'm sure he expected me to shout back or whatever. And he's still holding like this huge bow, and he put it down on the porch, and then I made tea and I said, "I'll just tell you what my experience is and why I have those signs up. You know, these animals are like family to me. They're my dearest friends. I have a deep relationship with them. I've been here for years." And I said, you know, "Some years ago, I befriended this male deer, a very large buck. I had also planted an orchard, and that buck would come through every year and eat my apples as far as he could reach. And he'd go on his back legs, eating, eating, eating." And I'm like, "Whatever. He gets the lower ones. I get the upper ones." So I got a special ladder for getting the upper ones. And, you know, I said, I just became friends with him. Like, he wasn't afraid of me. And there were others that came by that weren't afraid of me. They just got used to me. And I said, a couple years ago, he appeared and he had an arrow through his back, just under his spine. And his breathing was really labored. And I'm just telling this hunter about it. And I said, you know, it was the most painful thing I ever experienced was an helpless feeling, because I couldn't do anything for him. You know, when I tried to get close enough to get that arrow out, I thought, I can do this. I can break it. I can pull it from each side. He wouldn't let me near him to do it. He was too vulnerable. And then last year he didn't show up at all. And I'm guessing he died somewhere, you know, not an easy death. And I said, so for you, maybe that is just a prize, or that's like a trophy. But for me, that was a family member who I couldn't help. And I told this hunter about it while we were drinking tea on the porch. And he got real quiet and calm. And he said, I understand. And he said, we'll leave your land alone. And I said, thank you. You know, this is one place they can be and not be under attack. He said, I understand. And I'm sorry I yelled at you. And it just, the dynamic changed when I didn't make him the enemy, when I just decided, okay, we're going to be real present with each other. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just going to be with each other here. And, you know, I would see him in town sometimes and he'd say hello. And then eventually we would hug when we'd see each other. And, you know, I don't think the guy became vegan necessarily, but I do know that he had a better understanding of some people's relationship with these animals.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I'm close to tears. Aww. How beautiful, you know, and as you said before, like that door, the heart space.
Yeah.
Like it seemed that you have made that a bit more open for him, just by inviting him, hey, let's sit down, let's talk about it, instead of reflecting his anger. And I mean, there's a lot of people that are so deep in anger out there, activists and vegans, that bring always up the comparison of like, how should I tolerate somebody who eats animals? Because I don't, like, if they would abuse a child, I'd kill them on the spot or stuff like that. People say stuff like that and people think stuff like that. I mean, I've been there. I thought it a lot. I even said it, you know, like I've been a very vegan, angry vegan activist as well. We both were, we know that.
Yeah.
And at the same time, then like realizing that even though these thoughts are valid and they do make sense to our extent from a vegan perspective. The world isn't there yet that there are laws written to prevent people from hunting yet. Well, some places there are, you know, but the world isn't there yet. And it's stepping towards it by us holding that space for it to grow closer towards it and to expose it. But then it really circles back to compassion again. And I know that a lot of vegan activists come up and are like, oh shit, fuck compassion. Like, how dare you say and have compassion for these people? They're murderers, they're killers. But then when you listen to what Ray just said before, didn't it touch you? Like, because I was like, whoa, you know, I was really touched by how you held space for that hunter and how he was able to let that sink in. And I think when we really can speak into this compassion of the other person, because let's say 99% of people really want to live compassionate. Maybe there's some weird freaks out there that don't, you know, but most of us do. And so we really got to get to that level with them and not stay on the level of anger and frustration. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you so much.
You know, I picture it like this. Somebody says, hey, you know, I'm going to give you this gift. Gives me this box and it has anger in it. Oh, no thanks. You know, it's almost like we're painting a picture together, me and that other person. And they might be like, rah, rah, rah. And I can come in as a co-creator of what's happening in that moment. You know, I think that when we think we have to meet violence or anger with violence and anger, we're giving up all our power. Like the most powerful thing you can do is to meet violence and anger with love. And that's not a woo-woo thing. I'm not a woo-woo person. Like it's for me, it's just like this is what works. And after all these years of being a voice for the animals who people can't hear, they have voices, we just don't hear them. After all these years, I'm like, okay, what's best for the animals in this moment? What is best for the animals? Is it best that I let my ego take over or my emotions take over? Or is it best that I help this person to better understand their own heart? Like, you know, and it's every time, every single time, like I have been shocked by how people respond. People I do not imagine will respond. You often don't get to find out, like, what do they do after your interaction with them? Sometimes you don't know, you know, but there are times when there have been people who have been the most resistant and we have a conversation. And then later I find out, oh, they're not just vegan. You know, they work for vegan outreach. They do this, they do that. They're like very active in the vegan community. And I'm always so surprised. I'm like, whoa. You know, so I don't think of anybody as a lost cause. I don't think that there's anybody who isn't worthy of me taking the time to really be with them, to hear them, to care about them. You know, and certain people are, of course, going to be more challenging for us than others. Of course, you know, there are people who are just like, row, row, row. They just want to get you. And usually for like a lot of people I've talked to in communication workshops, their family is the biggest challenge. Mm-hmm. And that's because our expectations of our families are much bigger than it is of strangers. You know, we're like, oh my God, these people, they should understand me. They should love me. They should really hear me. We have a lot of expectations of our families. And, you know, I've learned so much from my family. You know, my father, he's my best teacher because he'll call and go, babe, you know. And I say, what's on your mind? And he goes, crustaceans, these people who release lobsters back out into the ocean. It's ridiculous. And, you know, he says things like this. And I'm like, oh, I think it's more ridiculous or more extreme to boil a living being. Like, that seems really extreme. And he's like, oh, come on, we're talking about a crustacean. And I said, yeah, so their skeletal system's on the outside, not the inside, but they still feel pain. Oh, babe. All right. And he hangs up. You know, he's like, he's got his mind, you know. He's a great teacher for me because sometimes I just want to shut him out, you know, like, oh my God, just leave me alone. I don't want to hear your questions and your challenges. Or he called me 1 year recently and he's like, babe, I decided something about you. And I'm like, what? I decided you care more about your animal rights than you do about your family. I said, oh, tell me about that. Describe how that looks. And he said, you know, Thanksgiving, because Thanksgiving was coming up. And he said, you're not coming for Thanksgiving. And I'm like, yeah. I said, you know, there's six of us who aren't coming, because we have six vegans in the family. There's six of us who aren't coming. So I don't mind being the person whose deepest core values come before a family gathering. I would rather be that than the person whose taste buds come before family. And he was like, what? And I said, you have six people who you're not going to see because you're attached to eating this turkey. So that, I don't want to be that person who says, I want to eat this, so I don't want to see my family. I'd rather be the person who says, oh, my deepest core values. Oh, I don't really want to be around that. I'm okay being that. So I'm fine with where I'm at. And he said, we're talking about a turkey. And I'm like, yes. I said, which, you know, I'm going to ask you something. If somebody that you knew was serving a dog and they had a roast dog in the middle of the table, would you go to the celebration? He said, absolutely not. I said, perfect. I said, for me, that bird in the middle of the table, same as having a dog in the middle of the table. So maybe that helps you understand this. He said, maybe. I'll talk to you later. You know? He's such a good teacher for me, because, you know, other people
wow.
Okay, let's do this.
Oh, your dad, that sounds like a great chemistry. Maybe
it is. It's great. We're like best buddies.
Oh, beautiful. Wow. Yeah. Well, I think we've had a fair share of golden nuggets for this podcast episode that everybody can take away. One last thing I want to ask you is, when people want to reach out to you, which I hope y'all do, because this woman, you identify as a woman, right? I didn't even ask, but I just assumed.
So funny, the whole pronoun thing. Somebody asked me the other day, oh, what's your pronoun? And I'm like, the most accurate one probably for me is it. Mm-hmm. But that's not one that people use. So I said,
no.
You can use whatever. We have a lot of gender fluidity in our house.
Good. Well, how can people reach out to you?
The easiest way is probably through our website, which is plantpeacedaily.org.
Good. We'll be linked in the show notes.
Don't write planet when you're typing it. Like, people often do that, planet, peace, daily, and it won't go through to me. You know, so go to Plant Peace Daily. You can see what we're doing. We have, we've created a vegan retreat center here, and just doing different outreach. And if anybody has, you can contact me anytime. I'm really good at getting back to people. If you have a situation around meditation, the difficulty of that, or communication with very difficult people in your life, just contact me and we'll have a conversation and, you know, get to the bottom of why it's so challenging.
Thank you so much for offering that, for being so open to receive people and to also share this bite of your wisdom here on my podcast. I really appreciate that. Love you for it. Thank you so much.
I so appreciate being here with you, June. What a pleasure. What a gift.
Really was. So reach out to her or reach out to me. I've also created a program that's called Become Your Medicine. It's an online program, so it's available from any corner in the world where there is interwebs. And it teaches you all these foundational skills around meditation, around breath awareness, around inner alignment. I'll leave the link down in the show notes as well. So just click those links, scroll through anything that interests you, and bless you all. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, June. Thank you for who you are on the planet.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Vegan Changemaker podcast. Please share it with your friends, your family, your social network, and your loved ones. If you want to get your impact to the next level, I invite you to take the Vegan Impact Quiz. I created it to help you figure out what the next steps are for you to elevate your vegan impact and create more significant influence in the world. Check out the link. I left it for you in the show notes, and I'm curious to see where you're gonna land and what your next steps will be. Let's veganize this world together, dear vegan friend.